Welcome back to Beyond the Code, AI and Law. I'm your host, Letlhokwa Mpidi. We live in an era where the challenge before us is no longer merely technological. It is fundamentally legal and societal. As artificial intelligence moves out of the labs and into our courts, our workplaces, and our public infrastructure, a widening chasm is opening up between rapid innovation and enforceable accountability. Voluntary ethical guidelines are no longer cutting it. Today, we are looking at this governance dilemma from two unique vantage points: the Global South, specifically Africa, and the European Union. Joining me to unpack this is a brilliant colleague, Professor Georg Borges. Professor Borges holds the Chair of Civil Law and Legal Informatics at Saarland University in Germany. He also serves as Director of the Institute of Law and Informatics at Saarland University, and we are incredibly privileged to have him as a distinguished visiting professor at the great University of Johannesburg. Professor Borges, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me here. It's a great honor. It's well appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Prof, we meet again, this time at the famous Kruger National Park. You and I are meeting here for the second time. I mean, the last time we had the conference here with colleagues from another university from Germany. And here we are attending a conference on AI and the law, and it's just a wonderful opportunity. Thank you so much for setting time aside to sit here with me. Thanks, Prof. Prof, in my recent book, Artificial Intelligence and the Law, which I co-authored with Professor Chilidzi Marwala, we argued passionately that AI has the incredible potential to streamline workflows and expand access to justice. But we also warned that if it isn't strictly governed, it can severely entrench systemic inequalities and amplify historical data biases. Europe has chosen a very distinct path here with the sweeping EU AI Act. From where you stand, what was the driving force behind that move?
Maybe the European legislator has read your book.
Yeah.
The AI Act is taking a very similar position.
Yeah.
We want to have AI in our courts, and we have many projects regarding the digitization of courts, including the use of AI. And the European AI Act is in no way posing any obstacles to this. Instead, it's a basis because it sets the legal and organizational basis for the development of standards for reliable AI that can be used in courts. If we didn't have the European AI Act, we would have to invent it.
Yeah. Wow, that is interesting. You know, we all look up to the European Union, although we are not at that level of development. And there is this big question of whether we can follow the European blueprint or we should just look at the local realities and come up with something unique or some soft law of some kind. What would be your advice? You know, this so-called Brussels effect, that when Brussels come up with something, it spreads across the world. What would you advise, you know, to, you know, your advice be for Africa?
Well, let's be a bit more modest. We have seen the Brussels effect in the case of the GDPR.
That's right.
Spread out to the world. But for many other areas of law, we didn't see such a Brussels effect. Let's be modest. And realistic. I mean, the European AI Act is often misunderstood.
Yes.
Let me put by anecdote. I was just in Tokyo earlier this year in a big conference where we had comparative analysis of AI regulation. In the conference, we had reports on AI regulation in US, UK, Europe, and Japan.
Right.
And when we had all given our report, it became clear to the audience that Europe is not the strict guy who does regulate. The US was much worse.
Honestly.
In US,
I thought EU was...
in the US, it turned out that in US you have state law governing AI,
right.
And California is taking a stricter approach, close similar to the European one. So, and I mean, you cannot avoid Californian law when you are in the States.
Right.
It is the heart of the industry. And then you have, at the state level, you have specific fields like in finance, in banking, in other fields that come on top of it.
Right.
So you have a mix of state and federal law in the US that is no way less restrictive than the AI Act. And as I said again, and funnily, we didn't advertise the AI Act properly. When I talked to the people in Japan, they said, oh, don't go to Europe. It's very strict regulation. It's not a good place to develop AI. This is definitely a misunderstanding, which was caused by the advertising of the AI Act. And finally, we are just cutting it down to the minimum by the AI, digital omnibus on AI, which will come into force in 2 weeks. So we polishing our regulation to be to the minimum, just in order not to pose any challenges or any obstacles, I want to say, to the development and use of AI. So I think we are mainly on the same boat.
Yeah.
However, as I said in as I learned, actually, I don't want to say as I said, as I learned during my visits to UJ and over my presentations of AI regulation in Europe, I learned that South Africa does not need the European AI Act for a simple reason.
Yeah.
The European AI Act is a specific element of European product safety law.
Right.
Product safety law is important in Europe. It is a good approach to safeguard the safety of our products.
Right.
And if you want to export products to Europe, you will have to adhere to them.
Right.
So, and there we had a gap.
Yeah.
We didn't have any standards for AI because AI was new. So what the AI Act basically did at first hand was filling a gap in existing legislation. That is often overlooked because people don't know the context with the European product safety law. So South Africa doesn't have European product safety law. So you don't need to have to fill any gap, right? What I think is, what is the basic underlying principle of the European AI Act? To cut it short in one sentence, it is that a producer of an AI system should have proper risk management in place and should and the AI system should undergo proper testing before being put on the market.
Yeah.
I think that's a very reasonable principle.
Yeah.
And I fully share the opinion that we should impose proper testing on AI systems in critical areas.
Yes.
And please, one last remark before I stop. The AI Act covers all AI systems, which means all modern software.
Yes.
But it regulates only 1% of it. For 90 or 99%, it doesn't impose any duties. Only for AI systems used, for instance, in courts, by police. So in these critical sectors, these products have to undergo testing. That makes sense.
Yeah. For safety, for example.
And for fairness.
Fairness, yeah.
And it's against bias. You have to test against bias, which I think is reasonable.
Yeah.
If we use, let's say, one of the critical areas are universities.
Yes.
If we use AI to assess students' performance.
Yeah.
That should be tested, right?
Yeah.
It should be fair.
Fairly.
It should be not discriminatory. And the AI Act is guaranteeing that testing be in place.
Yeah. Wow. Proper testing. The context is important.
Well, that goes with testing, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Prof, I have written extensively that voluntary ethics codes toothless shield, you know. Yeah. But our focus should be on proportional accountability rather than over-engineered pre-market compliance. I'm glad you talked about the protection of personal information because, you know, using this as an example, leveraging our existing robust legal pillars like as I said, Protection of Personal Information Act in South Africa, for example, and adapting consumer protection frameworks. Those are just some of the examples that one may use. We focus on the harm caused rather than forcing small innovators to prove a negative before they even launch. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this statement.
I think I basically agree. Mm-hmm. It should be risks. Any regulation should be adequate to the risk of the product that it goes with them. And sure, that is the idea of the European AI Act, for instance. For instance, small SME enjoy some privileges under the AI Act. However, if a small unit produces an AI system for tests for assessing students' exams, should they be relieved just because they are small? Certainly not, because their product is highly relevant and risky. So regulation cannot depend on the size of the producer's company. That's one problem. So we have to look at the risk associated with the AI system. And my research is mainly on liability for AI for a couple of years. So I think I share your view that we should not pose regulatory obstacles, but just be happy with the minimum that is needed. And I think testing is one of the minima that should be in place. And we should have proper liability rules in place, actually.
Wow, absolutely. I fully agree. Prof. Borges, the profession is changing faster than university curricula traditionally do. And as I always say, the gap is exactly where relevance is lost. If we are training law students to merely memorize statutes and spend dozens of hours manually formatting basic contracts, we are training them for a world that no longer exists. So let me share, at UJ, we are pushing heavily toward digitally enabled legal training. We want our law graduates to understand algorithmic accountability. They need to know how to cross-examine an algorithm. If an AI model flags a defendant as a high flight risk, a future defense lawyer must be equipped to challenge the training data, expose the algorithmic bias. This is what we're trying, you know, to train our students to protect human dignity. That is essential. Now, I'm wondering, what about, what is the situation, let me put it this way, what is the situation in Germany, especially at Saarland, at your faculty? Are civil law jurisdictions adapting? You know, we are a common law jurisdiction, and it has its challenges. It's discussion for another day.
Well, that's an amazing point, and I'm amazed to hear what you do at UJ. That sounds great. It's a big project.
It's ongoing. We're not where we want to be, but we have to force our students to get to appreciate that things are changing and they need to think differently.
I think that's the right way, and congrats to being first runners or front runners here. It's very important to adapt to the new era. Actually, in a university, in a civil law country, you don't train for the students to conduct cross-examination. That is, cross-examination doesn't play a role in German courts. So we don't have this art of cross-examination.
No.
Not at all. I'm very unhappy because I was attorney at a big law firm before going back to university, and I was never allowed to cross-examine any witness, actually.
No,
it's not possible. In German, the judges themselves examine, and there's no cross-examination. They intervene if you try. So I was very frustrated by that. So given that, just by way of anecdote, I want to say, we have different goals in our education just because in practice we have different tasks to perform. But apart from that, we are in the same boat. And the profession is changing dramatically, also in Germany. And of course, legal education has to follow and to change. And actually, you know me as an expert in AI regulation, but recently, for the past 2 years, most of my attention is to legal education and the way in the transformation of legal work. The basis of my interest was very selfish. I wanted to improve my own efficiency. I'm as a researcher, I'm competing with others.
Yes.
And if they write triple the papers or papers in triple quality, I'm losing behind.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm old enough to, I will not lose my hip position anymore. Yeah. But if I was young and I didn't use the technology, I couldn't compete anymore.
Yeah.
Make it clear to me, if even the academics, they have to use it and they have to do it properly.
Mm. Mm.
So it's a huge challenge to us in the first place.
Mm.
So I decided to accept the challenge. And in the beginning of 25, I told my team, well, let's do now AI first.
Yeah.
So whatever we do, we try to do it with AI first and rather than doing the traditional way.
Yeah.
That was a difficult task because they didn't understand how to use this.
Yeah.
They, funnily enough, they all used it, but didn't admit it. No one wanted to talk about it since they were unsure. Is it allowed? Am I wrong using it?
So will I get into trouble for using it?
So they didn't. Exactly. So they were shy. I didn't want to speak. And then I created a project.
Safe space.
In a safe space, I said, let's do a project. Mm. Let's come together weekly, 1-2 hours per week.
Mm.
And everyone is showing his or her best move with AI. So let's share our tricks. Let's share our secrets.
Yeah.
And let's prosper with it. For all of us. And that came, and we included some LLM students who came from, who were professionals.
Yeah.
They had also nice experience and they worked a lot with AI already.
Mm.
And at the end, we had a nice project and we developed a number of use cases, which we also published.
Wow.
So in September, we had the final session of our project and we published a number of 10 use cases for students and practitioners, not practitioners, but for students and legal scholars.
Mm.
And some of them are still very useful.
Mm.
One of them, which was one of the best, was improvement of legal formalities.
Mm.
Since my students used to make many formal mistakes when in citation and so on.
Mm. Mm.
And with our use case, ChatGPT could do the work for you.
Mm.
And the other one, which I found highly interesting, was improving your argumentation.
Mm.
So ChatGPT with the right prompts and the right method can help you improving the quality of your paper.
Mm.
And that is the best thing. I mean, in the end, it's about quality, not writing more mediocre papers, but writing better papers, right?
Mm. Mm.
That I find really cool. And from that on, we trying in my team to develop new use cases as much as we can.
Mm.
And every time and now I discover what I have overlooked. Mm. I have to admit, I'm so blind.
Mm.
Just last week, I discovered a use case which was obvious, but I hadn't seen it for a year.
Mm.
And that was checking the formal checking of students' papers with AI.
Mm.
Because so far I was writing them, hand typing them.
Mm.
Oh, you made this mistake, that mistake, and so on.
Mm.
Now they should receive a 2-page report of all their mistakes that I don't have to write.
Mm.
So far, you know what the biggest problem is?
Mm-mm.
That is that ChatGPT is making assessment.
Mm.
It always comes out, it's a good paper.
Mm.
It has a reasonable understanding of so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the task. It should just say it is this mistake, that mistake, and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, in a way, retrain or better prompting to force the ChatGPT to improve the results because the students accept an analysis of a machine, but not an assessment. They want my opinion, purely my opinion.
Mm.
And I want to clearly make it clear, I read your paper, I give the mark and the grade, and this is just an auxiliary method that helps you to improve your work. You see, that's very important in the end, for ethical reasons, for professional reasons, and so on. And this is what we do. So in my team, we are fully in, I can say.
Yeah.
And I could convince my faculty to follow us in this path.
That's incredible.
And it's a lot of fun actually for us.
Yeah, can
but
imagine.
May I make a second point for wider perspective.
Yeah.
So we are not just Saarland and UJ.
Mm.
We are part of a global discussion.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And after ChatGPT came out, we have seen an intensive global discussion on the same point. Mm. And in the center in our case is coursework. I mean, these papers that write students at home and submit it and are graded.
Mm.
how deal we with the fact that they all use AI to provide it? And in this global discussion, we could see at first, most universities prohibited the use of AI.
Yes.
So did we. In early 23, Saarland University prohibited the use of AI, as most universities on the globe did. 1 year later, a new trend came up that was transparency. You were allowed to use it, but you had to be transparent. And some were very, very clear that you please indicate all the prompts that you did and give me all the answers that you, or the output that you got. And then 1 year later, last year, a new trend came up.
Yeah.
And this is the current debate. Some universities, and we were front runners here in Germany, allowed the use of AI without any restriction. Others, however, want to go away from this coursework and rely on supervised tests only. But this is the big debate in Germany. Are we still relying on coursework, paper, or just oral tests or written supervised tests?
Right.
And that's important because what you need in practice is to produce papers.
Yeah.
So we don't go to, we think it's a bad idea to just escape. You escape from the challenge. You need to integrate AI into the art of writing paper and write better papers in a short period of time. And that is what we have to teach. And that's what we have to test.
Right.
But that's, that implies further changes in the way we teach and in the way we examine.
Right. Well, that's important. And we're seeing that wave, you know, in terms of where universities say, no, now we are allowing the use of AI and all that. And I think the debate will continue, you know, and it must. It must. While still on legal education, let's reflect a little bit, Prof. Borges, on the future of legal education, because this is really an important discussion. Both you and I, you know, are law professors, you know, and I think this is quite important. Let's talk about something that directly impacts both. Both of us, you know, as university leaders and educators. In my address at the launch of this podcast, Beyond the Code, I noted that the legal profession is changing faster than university curricula typically do. And I strongly believe that the gap is exactly where academic relevance is lost. I did touch on that. And I also argue that if we continue to train students to simply memorize case law, regurgitate statutes, and manually proofread routine templates, we are preparing the students for a world that no longer exists. And people need to realize that. At Saarland, I mean, I watch you with great respect and appreciation, and I'm excited that you are a distinguished visiting professor. And when we established the AI and the Law Institute, we're excited that we have a distinguished visiting professor of your caliber, because automatically you are part of the AI and the Law Institute. And congratulations. We're clapping from a distance, you know, when your team, you know, recently won an award at an international legal informatics symposium for the great work that you are doing on AI certification. I mean, given that you are running workshops explicitly on legal work with AI, how do we practically restructure a law degree? At some point, we need to talk seriously about how do we restructure a law degree. Should prompt engineering or algorithmic auditing become core? Mandatory law modules rather than just tech electives? What are your thoughts on this?
I totally agree. And congratulations to you, Jay, to have a VC having these ideas and goals.
Well, thank you.
It is obvious that we have to move. Otherwise, we will be left behind and we will do harm to our students. I'm currently the vice dean for students' affairs. And
yes.
So I supervise our educational program at Saarland University, at my faculty. And I have to welcome in October the new first years coming in.
Yes, yes.
And I have to guarantee that they have a future, don't I?
Mm.
So
it's important.
That is a heavy duty. And in these days, And I'm trying to convince my colleagues, mm-hmm. and I think they, most of them agree, mm-hmm. that we have to move on, mm-hmm. that we have to change our curriculum, mm-hmm. that we have to develop new ways mm-hmm. of education mm-hmm. and new contents. Mm-hmm. Just to give an example, last year we had the first very small mm-hmm. Course in AI in legal mm-hmm. studies mm-hmm. that was given by two colleagues and myself. Mm-hmm. And it was a voluntary one. Mm. No one came. Mm. Wow. Imagine mm. the mm. most innovative mm. course mm. In our university and no one comes mm. just because they're focusing on their mandatory courses mm. and rightly do so to mm. some extent. Mm. So mm. no reproach. Mm. But now from this fall, we will have a tool, mm. A double mm. Sized course mm. on AI in legal studies designed mm. for our first years. Mm. To make them familiar with the use of AI, mm. a tool, and I insist the proper use of AI tools mm. in their mm. work mm. From the first day on, mm. and that will be mandatory. Mm. So we will have to change mm. our regulations to mm. make it mandatory. That mm. will take a while, but we will offer it. Mm. And well, I'm in charge mm. of giving the lecture, so yeah, I will have some work over summer.
Yeah.
But I like the challenge to share my knowledge and my experience with the first years and to make them able to survive in this world. And definitely we have to go further and further. Just last week, I was talking in a professor's meeting on the next step that we have to go. If we allow students to use AI for their papers, that changes something because ChatGPT is totally able to, and also Copilot and all the others, they are also capable to write a nicely written paper. That sounds nice. And in the past, to be honest, don't betray me, but to be honest, if you received the paper that was nicely written and made some sense, it was a past. We have it passed. That cannot be enough in future. I was telling my students last year, what was a past last year is a failed this year. Because we have to level the bar. Because they have strong tools. They should use it. They are allowed to use it. They have to use it. And they have to produce better papers. And I said, wow, guys, that's great time for us. Now I want to see good argument. And then I realized, it's a nice anecdote. Then I realized, I asked myself, did I tell them what an argument is? I didn't. I had an intuitive understanding what a legal argument is, but I didn't have a definition. And I didn't teach it expressly to them. And I didn't teach them how to distinguish a poor argument from a good argument. What is a better argument? Do we have a metric of legal arguments? Not really. I mean, that is a reproach to the whole legal profession. We don't have a metric for the quality of legal arguments, really. We have an intuitive understanding what is convincing us or not. But in order to teach it and to make the students ready to use it from the first year, to produce better papers from the first year, and to evaluate their papers throughout their life, and later, what about dissertations can also be written by AI? You have to think the whole process of legal research and legal education from the scratch and give answers to this. And obviously another element will be the only realm that we will have is the methodology and the responsibility that we carry. Because the knowledge base that will not be our brain anymore, our memory anymore, that will be AI systems in practice. So we shouldn't teach them to memorize maximum contents. That's gone. But we have to teach them to properly, professionally use the knowledge base, which is now the AI-driven system, the agentic AI systems that can produce judgments, claims, contracts in incredible quality. So we have to be able to be confronted with such a knowledge base, of powerful knowledge base, and still master it and take responsibility for it. And to transport it to the reality of clients or under other stakeholders. That's huge. And that's different from the past. So what we do is, I don't see the future from in 5 years. Who am I? But I can see, I know what I have can do now. So we're doing now the first step and next year the next step. And we will go on this path to modify our curriculum and the content of what we teach and how we work little by little until we reach the platform, the plateau that we need to survive in the future world.
But this is important. I mean, this thing of memorizing things, even long before this AI thing came up, I remember when I did my master's in labor law, we were allowed to bring clean copies of relevant statutes, the Labor Relations Act. We didn't have to memorize sections. Before you sat for your examination, the invigilator would check that these are clean copies. So there was no need to sit there memorizing sections, but you needed to understand your work. If you just transcribed sections, you would fail. So you needed to know how to interpret the law and so on. So it's important, you know. So gone are the days of memorizing things and regurgitating what you have memorized. You are a global scholar. Earlier on, we talked about, you mentioned, apologies, that you were in Tokyo engaging with other global scholars, and there's a lot of value in that. You are a distinguished visiting professor at the great University of Johannesburg. Here we are in the Kruger. Of course, it adds a lot of... I wouldn't say burden, but it takes a lot of time because you have your duties back at home, but you take this responsibility seriously, and we really value that. And I thank you for that, because you share generously your knowledge. You appreciate the value of being a global scholar because you share your knowledge generously. And I hope you also learn something from South Africa and so on.
Yeah, my interview at this point, actually, I do learn.
Yes, thank you.
Some years ago, a few years ago, I had a tour. I was lecturing on the AI Act, on the draft AI Act at the time in Germany, Japan, Brazil, and South Africa. And what I learned is that the people in the Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere have a quite different perspective on AI.
Yeah.
Wow. In the Northern Hemisphere, we are a decrease in population. So we want the AI equipped robot to replace workplace.
Yes.
This is not what the expectation in South Africa.
No. We have got surplus.
If I say, hey, labor. AI is great, it can replace your work. Your workforce. You will be disappointed here.
Yes.
What you want to have is new jobs, new possibilities, better access to justice.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this is the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see it from different perspective and different with different interests and still use the same technology for different use cases.
Yes. Yes.
And this is the thing I really learned, that there are so many perspectives.
Yes.
It's not just the Northern one, the European one
perspective.
There are different societies, there are different needs and different situations in a society's way where you have that should be respected and that they're equally important. And we have to, and still at the end, we both agree that we need to have reliable AI systems when it comes to assessment of students' papers, right?
That's right. Mm.
And we have adequate methods of assessing students' papers that we can cooperate. Mm. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. There's no one size fits all. So we can't have a one size fits all approach. It's important to be global because it broadens your horizon and a global perspective. I mean, I benefited a lot from being a global scholar because of interactions with colleagues from all over the world. Because then you see a problem from different perspectives. You learn new things. You can bring ideas. Of course, while respecting your local context, you see that, okay, in some respects, you're doing well. In some respects, there are other ideas, you know, that you could use to improve your own system and so on. Now, the point that I want to make here is a dream that I have, especially when it comes to legal education, where through global engagement, a UJ graduate can interact with a German law graduate and a Japanese graduate and still be able to function on a global stage, in an AI legal system, and still manage to understand and function, exceptionally well. Such a dream, I asked myself, what will it take for us to realize that, despite all the differences, common law system, civil law system, and of course, country-specific system, because in this AI-driven world, we need our students, our graduates, to have opportunities at least to understand each other. Forget the language differences, so that at least they communicate. And AI is an enabler.
It definitely is. It definitely is. It was never as easy as traveling around
But I think I have an answer.
Translator at hand.
I think I have an answer. For example, we've got a few students from Saarland that did their masters here with us. We've got a few students that have visited your institute. So we must keep on pushing with such initiatives.
That's what I want to say.
Winter schools. That's what summer programs.
That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
I mean, we still have our summer school in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And last year we had three people from UJ. We were very proud of having them.
Yeah.
And I think they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And we will go on sending students to UJ from Saarland for sure.
Yeah.
And we can maybe do more.
We have to.
Let's figure out how we can do joint programs, joint summer schools.
We bring more. We host them here in the Kruger. We work hard during the day. In the afternoon, we do a game drive. It will be unforgettable.
That's probably difficult to realize. But Johannesburg is not that bad as a venue.
Yeah.
But let me advertise one thing before I forget it.
Yeah.
On 31st July, we have an online workshop, Legal Work with AI, where we will demonstrate how the high-level AI systems work, such as Harvey, where we have a judge from Brazil who is using in his daily work a high-level AI system.
Yeah.
I will talk on legal education of the future.
Yeah.
And that is... online for free.
I saw that demonstration at an AI conference in Macau. Extremely impressive, where it brought a backlog of over 3,000 cases or so to zero.
That is
impressive.
A little bit what happens in Brazil. They boosted efficiency by 20 or 30% with the use of AI.
Yeah.
And imagine if a South African judge can deal with more cases at the same time, with the same budget, you have more cases that could be worked on.
Yeah.
That may be a reason to offer better access to justice.
Wow.
So as it was said during this conference several times already, there's a huge potential in AI if properly used. I have to insist.
Yeah.
Properly used. And that's our task.
Agree. Prof. Borges, this has been an enlightening discussion. Thank you so much for setting time aside for us to have this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. It was an honor and pleasure.
Thank you. To our viewers and our listeners, thank you for tuning into Beyond the Code, AI and Law. Remember, the future of law isn't coded in a vacuum. It's built on shared justice, accountability, and dialogue. Until next time, keep looking beyond the code.